Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
Sports and sports and sports. Sports in your face. Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All righty. There we go. From the Top Gear Tire Studio, it is Felger and Mass here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, the 98.5 The Sports Hub app, which is free to download on your iPhone or Android device. Can't stress that enough. If you haven't already, you should. Extremely easy to use. No hiccups there. The 98.5 The Sports Hub app, again, on your iPhone or Android device. And, of course, simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. No Felger, no Maz once again today, so you get me, Big Jim Murray, in the A-hole chair alongside my pal Chris Gasper, the Boston Globe, and the Maz chair for an agenda-free Friday, which is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges, they don't. PlanetFitness.com, proud sponsor of Agenda Free Friday. Got Sean Silver alongside as well in my normal spot. Jimmy Stewart, Billy Lanny behind the glass. It being Agenda Free Friday means you can open up the phone lines, Jimmy, so we can go to the people early and often. Anything and everything on the table. From hot takes that you might have to anything sports related, you want a restaurant recommendation, have at it here on an Agenda Free Friday at 617-779-0985. Hi, Gasper. How are you? How was
your
fourth?
Hey, what's going on? So you're saying this time you and I are together, we're actually going to talk sports this time?
Yeah, we'll try.
Okay.
Yeah, for those that don't listen.
Because last time was a big hit.
For those that don't listen to Gasper
and I'm not
Murray,
being sarcastic.
Gasper and Murray, Saturday mornings, 11 to 2. I can't stress it enough. You should definitely listen to it when you're out and about getting dragged around by your lady to Pier 1 or whatever it is she has you doing, or you're doing your chores. You should listen to the show. But last week, as I was starting to get into the sickness, that I'm still sick, by the way, Chris, starting to get into the sickness, came in, burnt out on all the stories. I said, we're not talking sports today until like maybe the last 5 minutes of the show. And I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun. So
it was. People loved it. I don't know what that says about our sports knowledge, but I think they actually preferred it too.
Well, I generally think this is the worst time of the year. Like, give me deep February around the NBA All-Star break, 10 times out of 10 over this. Now, granted, there has been NBA-related stuff to talk about, but this time of year, especially when the Red Sox are getting set to play 3 weeks worth of bums, you know, Kansas City followed by, who is it, the Texas Rangers.
Toronto.
And then Toronto, and then the Orioles, and then the Detroit Tigers, like, ooh, man. It's gonna be rough for the next few weeks. So yeah, we'll be all over the place today. But there are legitimate sports things to talk about. As there's more bubbling around Kyrie Irving. Where is Carmelo Anthony gonna go? Is he gonna hook up with LeBron James out in Los Angeles with the Lakers? There's some Marcus Smart news, and that's where you'd like to start here on Agenda Free Friday. So have at it, Chris.
Yeah. So the story that Mark Murphy had in the Boston Herald that came out last night that Marcus Smart is, you know, disgusted at this point that the Celtics haven't made more of an overture to him to get a deal done to sign him. I mean, he's a restricted free agent, so I don't blame the Celtics. You sort of let the market do its work, and the market says this guy's not as valuable as he thinks. And that got me thinking about this, Jim. He's really the last of what you call the Bridgies, you know? And during that time, that group of guys, to me, was defined by the fact that there were a lot of guys on the team who were good, but they thought they were a lot better than they really were. From Isaiah Thomas to Jay Crowder, and now Marcus Smart. And you can kind of see that. Like, he thinks he's more valuable at this point than he really is and has that sort of overinflated sense of his self-worth. I mean, how many teams go out of their way to sign the sixth or seventh best guy on their roster?
Yeah, I thought that was a bad look last night. Now, there's a counter report to that as well. Was it from The Athletic, Jimmy? Is that where that was?
Yeah, we'll give them credit. I like their site.
Yeah, so, you know, they were saying that there have been talks between Marcus Smart and the Celtics, but I like to go with the negative. Mark Murphy, obviously,
Mark's been around forever. He's plugged in.
And plugged in with Danny Ainge, so I'm going with that as gospel, and I'm with you 100% here. It's such a bad look. It's one of the things that I found kind of detestable about that team and why I refer to them as the Bridgies and why I would roll my eyes so much at that particular team. Yeah, they were fun to a point. They were never going to win anything, and Danny Ainge proved what I felt about them. Like, you maxed it out, he blew it up, and the egos with some of those players, your Isaiah Thomases, your Jay Crowders, like, dude, you're just basically role players. You're overvaluing what you really mean. And I'm a Marcus Smart guy.
I am too.
Extremely important.
I like the guy.
To this team's DNA, and, you know, he brings so much in terms of, you know, that, I don't know, that junkyard dog mentality that I love about this team. But, dude, like, slow your roll.
Exactly. Like, you got to know who you are, son. Like, that's kind of the deal, right, in the NBA. Like, you know, and to me, it just speaks that he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. And here's the other thing. His value is greater to the Celtics than it is to almost any other team in the league. In other words, this is a guy who has a limited market because the things that he does, diving on the floor, hustling, defending, those plays really only help contending teams that already have their core. If you're the Sacramento Kings, who are sniffing around restricted free agents like Zach LaVine, who can actually, I don't know, shoot, you look at Marcus Smart, you're like, oh, that's a nice player. He'd be good for our culture. We'll still be in the lottery, though, because he can't score consistently or efficiently. And I also think the other teams in the league look at him, Jim, and say, okay, we know what Brad Stevens has done. We've seen what he's done with Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and Kelly Olynyk and Jonas Jerebko and even Jordan freaking Crawford. And he can't get this guy to shoot better than 36% from the field? He can't get this guy to shoot better than 30% from three? Well, what are we going to do to make him a consistent offensive player? Offense still sells in that league. You have to be able to put the ball in the basket to get the big bucks.
All right, the lack of self-awareness by Marcus Smart. We'll add that to the discussion here right off the top on an agenda-free Friday. Sean Silver, what's on your mind?
Well, I think very start of the show yesterday, Jim, you said you can do backup goalie talk on your own time. But when it comes to the Bruins in the offseason, the topic of Erik Karlsson as an attractive trade target kind of sticks in my craw. You know, there's an elite guy. There's a multiple-time Norris Trophy winner right there. And sounds like it would be a good piece for the Bruins to acquire. I mean, they got a lot of young guys. They got some assets. Basically, they're in the same position that the Celtics were a few years ago. So don't you go out there and make the big deal. There was only two ways that the Bruins were going to win, I think, the offseason in the eyes of their fans. One would be get John Tavares, and we all knew that wasn't going to happen. Just look at the way that was executed. He was always going to Toronto so he could use his bed sheets again and, you know, wear his little probably shiny jacket from the 80s or whatever the heck that was.
I love those jackets. I had a Celtics one.
As did I, Chris. Yeah. We would have looked really bomb in those. I don't know. That's probably a way out of date term to use.
Well, you're a dad, so you know you're cool in the
Yeah, it's all. I'm just flowing it all out there. The other way would be if you acquire the big, you know, trade piece, and that is Karlsson. And it looks like right now the reports are, the rumors are that he is going to be going to your own division. So what I want to know is what are the Bruins doing? Are they just hanging around? I mean, you know, we spent Ray Bourque's entire career, the Bruins hung around. Yes, they made the cup twice, but they were never really a contender. They were never really an elite. Last year, they showed that they're one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference right now with a core of Bergeron, Marchand, Tuukka Rask, Zdeno Chara a little bit past his prime, and a bunch of young guys plugging the holes. And that's really the recipe for success in the NHL. So are they building, you know, 3 to 5 years down the line here with these young guys that they're just going to hoard? Or are they going to take this veteran core, all-star caliber players who are still here, still playing, keep a couple young guys around on your third or fourth line, but go for it. Get Erik Karlsson into Boston, or get somebody who's a high-caliber name who can help you keep up with Tampa and with the Maple Leafs, because those are teams that are lapping you right now.
Yeah, so John Karlsson is rumored to be traded to Tampa. Toronto obviously got better over the weekend by signing John Tavares. It does feel like it's poop or get off the pot for the Bruins right now, and this is what I was going to find interesting. Like, I didn't really think Tavares was going to end up here, but once it got past Saturday night and the Islanders were out of it, I was like, oh, well, there's a real chance. But I was wondering, once it didn't happen, so he goes to Toronto, like, okay, so are they going to just sit on their hands and do nothing? Is Don Sweeney going to do anything here? And so far, it feels like no. Like, can you make an attempt to trade for Wayne Simmonds or something? Because I do believe they're ahead of schedule. The window's now. While you still have guys like Char and Patrice Bergeron, you need to strike while the iron's hot, while these guys are still, you know, a little bit past their prime-ish, but still playing at an extremely high level. Like, you got to improve this team somehow. And a backup goalie right now? And who's the defenseman?
John Moore.
Like,
John Moore.
Okay, at least he's a left
player.
Shot.
Yeah. Like, nice moves, but does that get you past the second round?
No.
Doesn't feel like it.
And it's an incomplete team. And the difference between the Bruins and the Celtics are that the Celtics don't have to make a move right now. It would be nice for them to bring in a marquee, you know, player or name to add to this collection of talent, but they can compete. I mean, they may not be able to make the Warriors, but we know they're probably getting out of the East. The Bruins, we don't even know if they can get out of their own division. So they got to do something. Again, nice surprise. Love seeing the kids play after a half decade with Claude Julien not letting anybody off the bench. So that's great. Let them run around out there and, you know, get everybody all titillated out there in NHL world. Like, oh, these Bruins young players, we'd love to have one of them. But what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, they have too many picks, too many prospects. Like, it's time, again, it's the time to strike is now. I will defer my take for the time being because I have a thought on the one story that unfortunately is just not going to go away. And so in the meantime, we'll go to the people here in an agenda-free Friday. Like I said, everything on the table. So we'll start with Mike in the car, who is calling in about sunscreen for the car. Okay, sure, Mike, have at it.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Just calling because he asked what they were asking him about at the end of the show yesterday, and it was they were asking about those sunshades for the car windshield. Just figured I'd let him know.
Sunshades. Okay. All right. Well, maybe that's what Beetle was asking me about. He couldn't remember, and neither could I. And we're off to a bit of a rough start with the calls here on an agenda-free Friday, of course, brought to you by Planet Fitness. So, we'll go to you early and often.
What happens when you defer an opening take, Jim?
That's
right. It happens all the time.
Right. Yep. I should have learned.
You ever get a bad sunburn on a road trip, though? I mean, that's not fun.
Yeah, but that's part of the summer experience. At one point, you should get the bubbling, the bubbling pus boils from getting too much sun. That's
Melanoma Murray over
yeah.
here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. How about that? That mold didn't look like that a month ago. Should probably get that checked out and ripped off my skin. 617-779-0985. Like I said, anything and everything on the table here on Agenda Free Friday. We'll get to you, and I'll get to my take coming up next year on Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Agenda Free Friday here at Felger and Maz, 98.5 of Sports Hub. It's Gasper and Murray in for the guys today, alongside Sean Silver. And you want to go to you early and often at 617-779-0985. Anything on the table here on an Agenda Free Friday? This was my thought, which I wanted to get to. I want to just give fair warning to NFL fans. You should prepare yourselves. The national anthem is going to continue to, unfortunately, be a topic of discussion this coming season. And to me, the NFL owners have nobody to blame but themselves. Last night at yet another completely unnecessary Please Love Me rally to fire up his base, this time in Montana, apparently, the president said the NFL's new national anthem policy, Chris, is worse than the one previously permitting players to kneel rather than stand for the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, in case anyone hasn't been paying attention, back in May, the owners changed this thing and decided to say to the players, well, you got to stand or be fined. But if you don't want to come out for it, you can stay in the locker room, and that's all good. And now Trump is rallying against that, railing against that, because it's easy red meat for his base. And, according to, what was that? It was a Bleacher Report story a little while back, too. Like, there was that quote where he said to Jerry Jones,
this is a win for me.
You can't win.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's right. And the president's right about that. Say what you will about Trump, and I am no fan of him. But one thing I will give him credit for, his pettiness knows no bounds, and these idiot owners and Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, should have known that, and they should have left this thing alone. And it had pretty much kind of died out, I thought, towards the end of the season. Players that still wanted to do it did it, but I felt like it was pretty much just at that point, maybe like a handful of players that were doing it. It stopped being a topic of discussion, and even if Trump wanted to continue to talk about it at his rallies, like, I don't know. I think it would only kind of work in that room and not go further than that. But because the owners decided to placate him more than anybody else, I don't think this has to do with anyone on the left side or any kind of sponsors. This was about trying to get Trump off their collective backs, and it's blown up in their face, and it has nothing. Like, come on. Like, you want to argue, that's fine. Again, 617-779-0985. This isn't about the flag to this guy. This is about this is pettiness. This is about his anger of being left out of this boys club of the NFL. He went from shady USFL owner to try to parlay that into shady NFL owner and become owner of the Buffalo Bills.
And they denied him.
And he will hold that against this collective 32 forever. And this is why this thing is going to continue. And they all should have known that. They should have left this thing the hell alone. It's not going to go away. And they only have themselves to blame.
Oh, I totally agree. And here's the worst part about it. Like you said, the aim of this thing was to try and placate the president. And obviously it hasn't accomplished that, but on the other side of it, I think it sort of inflamed the players who are basically saying, wait, what now? You're telling me you're going to fine me for this? And by the way, if you read what they came out with, obviously there's the opportunity for discipline from the NFL, but they left it open-ended enough that you can interpret it that it could be a double jeopardy thing. There could be discipline from your club. They could fine you. They could do something. And then the NFL could step in as well. So now it looks like you're trying to silence these guys, and that's not enough to placate the president. So you're sort of in this area where what did you really accomplish? You didn't accomplish anything other than further damaging your brand. Because now you have the people who supported the anthem protests and what it, you know, stands for, which is being against police brutality and social injustice and inequality and all that stuff. So those people are saying, okay, now you're kowtowing. You've silenced these guys. They're not happy. And then on the other side of it, you have President Trump saying, well, this isn't far enough. They still won't stand for it. It's un-American. So they're mad at you. So, I mean, you want to talk about our brand is crisis. Thank you, NFL. Like, that's terrible. They completely mismanaged the situation. They didn't make anybody happy, and they didn't make the situation better from a public relations standpoint for the league in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so again, like, read into it. If you don't know his history with the USFL, it's
he tanked that thing.
This is about him being angry, and until he's in the grave, he'll be mad about the fact he didn't get to be part of the NFL Boys Club. That's all that this is. This has nothing to do with the flag, and it's easy for his base, and it works for him. And again, credit to him. He is, you know, the man is smart. He got where he did. He got, you know.
He gets pop psychology. Yeah. You have to give him that.
Oh, yeah. The man knows how to get a pop in a room, too. And this works for him. And it's going to continue to work for him. But the owners played into it. You idiots. So you reap what you sow here. And so it's going to continue through this coming season. Oh. All right, that's on the table as well. So we'll go to you. Let's go to Frank the Tank with a Bruins thought. You're next up here on an agenda-free Friday. Hey, Frank.
Hey, boys. Look, before we get to the Bruins, real quick, Tim, I agree with you on the animal thing. People who go and feed sharks or swim with sharks, they're trying to feed with
Frank, I'm going to put you on hold. Like Frank, you're okay. Frank, I'm going to put you on hold because your cell reception is awful. So I'll try to go back to you in a minute. How about Dave in Norwood? You're next here on an agenda-free Friday with a thought on David Price.
Murray Gasper, how you doing, bro?
Hey, good. What's up?
What's going on? David Price, I'm pretty sure, Murray, you are the number one reason he is hating Boston. You went right up his tailpipe. Very proud of you. Keep up the good work. But was listening to you last weekend on Music Talk. You never seen Primus Live?
I haven't, no. Would you recommend it, or are they too jammy?
It's a must-see. It's not jammy. Probably one of the best concerts you'll ever see. Are you a Tool fan?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that's the best bang for your buck you'll ever get to see in a concert. But Tool, Primus, right up there at the top. Keep up the good work on pissing off David Price.
All right, Dave Owen, I will. So, Chris, the last time that we worked together, yes. It was before.
You do realize that, you know, much like you ranted and raved on Saturday about people playing it right and playing the hits, you do realize that Felger will call in from Nantucket and tell you to, quote-unquote, play it right on his show.
You are correct there, but this was my own little personal protest because I was mad at myself for not taking the whole week off. Those guys had the correct foresight of taking this whole week off, and if he wanted to play it right, well, he wouldn't be playing Grab Ass with Rich on Nantucket playing squirt gun fights or whatever it was the last couple of weeks, and if he wanted the show done correctly, he'd be here today and yesterday.
That reminds me of something my dad always said, if you want something done right, do it yourself.
Yeah. Yes, I got the same talk time
Sorry,
and again from my dad. Yeah, so if you don't like it, tough.
Take the helicopter back right. If you don't like it.
Jeeves, get me back to Brighton. I have a show to do. The young man is screwing it up for us. The ratings are going down. See, last time you and I worked...
I just default back to the last time that Felger was out, and it was a week of Jim Murray. Our ratings were really good.
That is correct. Chris was part of that, too. Believe me, I have that one stored away for the next contract negotiations.
Like, really strong.
Chris, we hadn't yet got to the David Price start. The big David Price start on Sunday night, rather, against the New York Yankees, where he absolutely implodes, where the lights are the brightest. 5 home runs. Really couldn't have been worse. What'd you take away from that? Is it further reason to never trust this guy in a big game?
Well, I'll tell you this one. You know, how many cigarettes did you have after that start?
I'll tell you. It was as I said, I ended up having to take Monday off because I was sick. But that, in that stretch, that's the only thing that made me happy in about like 3 or 4 days was watching him absolutely implode
in New York. I figured. I mean, look, I think it's a real issue with David Price and the Yankees. I think this is psychological. Like, he has some sort of pinstripe PTSD here. The first start, what, he lasts like an inning, and he had this nebulous numbness that no one has explained to this point, tingling or whatever in his fingers. The second one, he couldn't make the start, and the Red Sox came out with that statement after the fact. I know we all laugh at him for the Fortnite thing, but the team basically took a shot at him. They said, yeah, mild case of carpal tunnel, which is like, mild case. That basically means like, yeah, you could be out there. I mean, I can type with a mild case of carpal tunnel, and that's really what it's supposed to stop you from doing.
They might as well have said he's a giant pain in the ass.
Pretty much. Pretty much. And then they sent him out there for this start, and he gets his brains beat in on national television. I'll tell you this. If he doesn't have PTSD from facing the Yankees, he definitely has whiplash, because every pitch he's snapping his head back to see how far it's going at Yankee Stadium. So when you look at overall, look, the Yankees have raked against left-handed pitchers this year. They're the best in the majors, OPS against lefties. If you're the Sox, like, one, you have to say, okay, David Price is somebody who can't perform against the Yankees. But overall, with our rotation, if Pomerantz comes back, four of our five starters are left-handed. And I know Sale was great, obviously, against the Yanks. He shut him down, so, you know, he's maybe immune to this. But they kill left-handed pitching. Like, that doesn't really inspire confidence in me in terms of the Red Sox and Yankees in this pennant race or them meeting in the playoffs, how left-handed the Red Sox are in that rotation and the way the Yankees absolutely rake against lefties.
Pinstripe PTSD. I wish I was smart enough to come up with something like that. That's
well, you know, as you know, and as many of my readers, you know, tell me all the time and like to criticize me for, I'm like a child, Jim. I love alliteration. If this doesn't work out, I'm going to go work for Channel 7 because I know they love the alliteration too.
They have the Red Sox brass, though. They have to look at this guy at this point and just say, oh my God, what have we done? Like, I was for the signing at the time. He was the marquee free agent. They needed top flight pitching. Dave Dombrowski wanted a big arm. He was the guy. He was better than Johnny Cueto or Zimmerman at the time, too.
Like, oh, Zach Greinke was the backup plan.
All right, yeah, Zach Greinke, too. And
Zach
he's another Greinke mental case.
Yeah, he'd be even worse than Price here. He can't handle a big market.
But boy, like, I don't know how you just, even if you were, if you're a holdout defender of that guy, hello, Barstool and Jared, happy-go-lucky Dan Roach. I don't know how you look at Sunday night and look at David Price and just realize, like, oh, my God, this guy stinks. And $30 million for what? Like, he looks like an ace against the dregs of the league. And look, those nine starts prior, he looked phenomenal. I was like, okay, well, maybe he's turning it around. And then he melts down once again in the biggest game with the biggest spotlight on him in a must-have game against the competition, the Yankees, that you will be neck and neck with between now and October. And five home runs, and none of them cheap. And you could tell within the first couple of pitches, too, it's like, oh, my God, he doesn't have it. Like, the huffing, the puffing, you could tell.
Deep breaths.
It's a mental thing. That's all it is. It's a mental block. It's pinstripe PTSD with
David Price. Totally think it is. And I'll tell you, if I'm the Red Sox now, because I feel like they were sort of setting up their rotation, you know, trying to set things up so they, you know, you have Price and Sale go in these series, your best two stars. Moving forward throughout the rest of the year when they face the Yankees, I mean, I would try and set the rotation up and rejigger it so he's not starting against them.
Mass has put him in the bullpen. I'm for that. You know, I think you're better off, especially if you have a lead. You know, you're better off having him come out of the bullpen maybe 7th, 8th inning and have him be the Andrew Miller type of a couple of years ago. Look, he was able to do it last year.
Oh, he was tremendous. He was their best pitcher last year in the postseason.
That's it. Like, that should be his role going forward. But as a starter in those big games for the playoffs, that's not going to change. All right, Sean Silver's going to get you caught up with the Hub headlines here. It's an agenda-free Friday, and right back to you. Here on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It has been made clear to me by multiple people, Kyrie never really wanted LeBron to come back in the first place. That he didn't think, like, that it was necessary. Like, LeBron said something to Kyrie on the court following a game when he was with Miami, something to the effect of, keep going, keep doing what you're doing, you never know, I could be back here one day or something like that. And Kyrie went in the locker room and basically said, we don't need that. Like, what's he talking about? We don't need that guy here. So Kyrie never really wanted him here.
Right, and much like, you know, Jason spoke to someone after the championship where LeBron, maybe that was the moment, okay, he's going to be leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie and his camp considered asking for a trade after the championship.
Yep.
They decided to keep it in-house and not go forward with it, but it's something they discussed.
Yep.
Agenda-free Friday, Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. So, that is the sound of three longtime beat reporters of the NBA and guys that have covered the Cleveland Cavaliers. It's Jason Lloyd of The Athletic, Dave McMenamin of ESPN, and Joe Varden of Cleveland.com. That was from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Talking about Kyrie Irving and how he wanted out after they won that title in 2016. So the more that this onion gets peeled back here with Kyrie Irving, I feel like the more it stinks. Over the last few days, there's more stories coming out whether or not Kyrie might have real interest in going to the New York Knicks at this time next summer from unnamed NBA executives. I think it was Woj, I might have that report, but unnamed NBA executives feel like, oh, well, I mean, it's a given. I mean, he's from New Jersey. He wants to go be the guy that goes, revives the New York Knicks. After hearing this, I don't know. I'm a little bit more worried about that than I was just 24 hours ago when I was like, okay, I know that this has been bandied about. Kyrie's a bit of a weird guy. I haven't really worried about him leaving the Celtics here. I thought it was a foregone conclusion once the trade happened. I didn't have to worry about him signing a long-term deal here, and I hadn't. But the more I hear about this guy and how mercurial he is and how much it really feels like, I don't know, to me, that Kyrie really just wants to be the alpha dog and not have to worry about anybody else around him and anyone else getting the shine. It has to be about him. I do kind of worry about him going to the Knicks, even though it's a, you know, one of the more awfully run franchises in all of sports, let alone the NBA, because he wants to be known as the guy that revives the Knicks.
Yeah, he wants to be the guy who resurrected the Knicks. And what's interesting about him is he's definitely an eccentric guy. I think he's an unpredictable guy. I think he's one of those guys who's a contrarian, but I also think he's stubborn. And once he gets something in his head, you know, that's what he's going to do, and you're not going to change his mind unless you convince him it was his idea to change his mind. So I just hope that this idea of going to the Knicks is not his idea. Maybe it's somebody in his camp's idea. Maybe he feels like, look, you know, hopefully Uncle Drew does well enough, you end up going to see it, so that there's a sequel, and he says, okay, I don't have to be in a major market. You know, I can get Uncle Drew too, you know, here in Boston or wherever I'm at. But if he's interested in sort of building that brand, and the funny thing about Kyrie, Jim, is that, you know, those guys alluded to the fact he never wanted LeBron, and the fact that after the 16 title in Cleveland, he was thinking about asking for a trade. But do you notice every time this comes up, and even with Kyrie, we've never gotten an explanation why? Like, we still don't know why he wanted out of Cleveland. Is it just because LeBron's annoying? You know, LeBron brings his clique around? Like, what is it? Or is it just his ego? We've never gotten, you know, he gives you all this sort of like pseudo philosophy speak about, you know, you have to grow as a person and adapt, and sometimes it's just time to change. But there's never any concrete rationale for why he wanted out of there.
Well, because I think he's smart enough to know that if he were to say the truth, which I speculate is him, what he would have to say is, well, LeBron's more popular than me, and I wanted it to be about me, and I didn't want LeBron to take the shine away from me. That's why I wanted out, or I didn't want LeBron back. He'd look like a complete a-hole if he said that, and if he admitted the truth. So he dances around it instead.
You're right, but if you're the Celtics, and that's true, and you've come to learn this, isn't that kind of scary?
Yeah, this is why.
Isn't that scary that maybe he's more about himself than winning?
Yeah, this is why, Chris. Yesterday, I sat here with Sean and said that, you know, for all this and the speculation of him going to New York, I'm not that worried about it because I do think that he's about winning, and I think this is much to do about nothing, and I'm not that worried about it. After hearing this, the more I think about it, it's like, okay, is it really about winning for this guy? Or is it about you, and you want to have it be all about you? And so what? Now I have to worry, or do the Celtics have to worry, if Jason Tatum really plays himself into being a top 10 player next year, and he starts to get more national recognition, is Kyrie going to get jealous? And then he decides at this point next year, even if this team has a competitive final series against the Warriors, and the future is bright with this great coach and all these young players, that Kyrie says, nah, Jason's starting to take some of my shine. And same with
Jalen Brown,
Yeah. as well, and some of these other players.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't like that.
Gordon Hayward, well, he's back too.
Hayward's back. He's Brad's guy. Yeah.
Too much talk about Brad too. This is about the team. It's not about me.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that's something they got to worry about here with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it is or it isn't, but what troubles me with the Cleveland situation is there's never a clear explanation for exactly what it was. Like, it could just be a pride thing. It could be, I don't need that guy to win. You know, maybe it's a Kobe Shaq thing, and obviously those guys didn't get along, but a big part of it for Kobe was proving, I don't need this guy to win. And if that's what it is, I like that. I like that. I like the fact that he doesn't want to be the little brother, and he wants to prove he can do it on his own. But if it's what you're saying, and it's about the shine, and it's about the recognition, and it's about being the man, and it's about everything being tailored to me, and I'd rather do that than win, then I have some concerns.
So even if he were to get, and this was something I was talking with Sean yesterday too, like, so even if it worked out where he was able to convince Jimmy Butler to go there, and okay, and you have Kristaps Porzingis, who's a great young talent, so you have a good big three. Is that still better than what the Celtics have? No. And that team is still, now it feels like James Dolan's not going to sell it, so it's going to continue to be run poorly, even if they have a better coach now in David Fizdale. Like, it's still the Knicks. They're one of the dregs of the league. I don't care if you have that big three. It's not better what the Celtics have going forward for the next 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, it depends on what you want, though. I know you guys talked about this, I think, you know, yesterday. It's like, does he want to be known as the guy who resurrected the Knicks? I mean, there's nothing like, all you can ask, remember how big it was when Jeremy Lin, remember Lin Sanity?
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
that? I mean, How Kyrie Irving is an established, proven all-star. If he goes there and plays really well and lifts the Knicks up, what do you think it would be like for him in New York? If it was like that for Jeremy Lin.
And a lot of people have tried. A lot. I mean, think about Carmelo when he was coming home. That was not all that long ago. And then he got upstaged by Jeremy Lin.
So that's about pop and national recognition and being known as the guy that resurrected the Knicks. That's more important than winning more titles? Because the better chance to win more titles is with the Celtics. Like, I don't know, man. Like, the more this, that audio that we just played, the more that I'm really starting to think about this, it's starting to worry me with
it is
with
concerning.
Kyrie.
What I want to know is this. Is it just a LeBron thing, right? In other words, is it just about LeBron? Is it just about getting out of LeBron's shadow and what the situation, because, you know, Kyrie understood that if LeBron came back to Cleveland, regardless of what they accomplished together, those would be LeBron's accomplishments in terms of NBA history and legacy. So is it about that? Is it just about LeBron? Is this just specific to LBJ? Or is this something that he feels about anybody? You know, like you said, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or anybody that could take away the recognition that he wants.
Frank the Tank, go ahead. Hopefully you have a better signal. I know you wanted to talk about Eric Carlson. Go ahead.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes. Excellent.
All right, good. Before I get to Carlson, the thing with the animals, Jim, any human being that goes into an animal's environment,
oh, you were good for like 5 seconds there.
He might have just went to an animal's environment.
Yeah, right, Frank. It sounds like you got mauled by the bears. I'm going to put you back. Yeah, no, I still can't hear you. You there? Hello? Oh, Frank.
Can you hear me?
Okay, here we go. Oh, Frank, I'll put you back on hold. I don't want to hang up on you.
It sounds like it's like the Matrix, and they're like dialing him in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're dropping him in.
Pete in Delaware on Gasper's opening take on Marcus Smart. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys. Hey, first of all, as far as Kyrie goes, one quick comment. I'm starting to wonder if Boston wants to actually give him a max, super max, between his injury and whatever else is going on with him, just to throw that out there. As far as Marcus Smart goes, I agree. I mean, I want him back, but Boston would be crazy right now to offer him anything. He needs to find, how do you set a market for a guy like Marcus Smart? He doesn't have any really offensive skills. He's obviously a difference maker, but like Alfred, how do you set a market for a guy like that?
Well, I think that's what the Celtics are doing. Like, they're letting the market set the market for them. Are there other teams that look at what he does and say, okay, this translates, this will change our culture and result in winning? Or do they sort of look at it and say, okay, what he does is great, but we have to fill other roles first, like guys who can actually score, guys that will be all-stars and can put us in a position to potentially contend or contend at least for the playoffs. And I think what the NBA market is saying, particularly this offseason, because I think already a lot of people have moved on to 2019 in terms of cap space. You know, they're looking ahead. The market's a little bit tight to begin with. So in fairness to Marcus Smart, that's working against him. Maybe it's different next year if he just signs a qualifying offer for this year and is an unrestricted free agent in 2019. But I think the market looks at this guy and says, okay, he's a good player. We'd like him on our team, but not at a premium because he's not really going to affect our wins and losses as much as somebody who can consistently score the basketball.
I'm all for a guy going out and trying to get max value. But in his case, like, don't overplay your hand, Marcus Smart, and this is the best fit for you. So the Celtics are right to lay back and hang in the weeds and see how this plays out and then make their offer. So for him to act all butthurt, and what was the exact quote?
I think it was disgusted.
Disgusted?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, calm down, buddy. Hey, but you've been around Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas a little bit too
much.
Yeah,
it does feel like. But here's the flip side of that. Is that something, is that a publicity stunt from Marcus Smart's agent, his representation, to try and put some pressure on the Celtics to do something here, knowing that Smart is a popular player with the Green Teamers and is a popular player with Brad Stevens, to sort of say, hey, like, but if you're Danny Ainge, I mean, he's the coolest poker player there is. It's like he can look over there and he knows that Smart and his camp are bluffing because they don't have any other interest or any other offers at this point.
Marcus Smart and the growing concern of Kyrie to the New York Knicks. Add that to the conversation here on an agenda-free Friday. You want to join the show? We have one open line at 617-779-0985. Promise we'll get right to your calls in our long commercial-free segment coming up next. Over 20 minutes commercial-free. And I will also have a pair of tickets to Monday Night Raw, returning to the Garden this Monday, July 9th, coming up right after this here on Felger and Maz on an agenda-free Friday.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Janta.
Magenta?
Janta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Agenda-free Friday, Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub. It's Gasper and Murray in for the guys today. Sean Silver alongside as well. And we'll hear from you at 617-779-0985 here in our long commercial-free segment. And a reminder, between now and the headlines at the top of the hour, I'll have a pair of tickets to Monday Night Raw returning to TD Garden this Monday, July 9th. So we'll be listening for that. Let's go to Steve in Maine with a Bruins thought. You're next here on an Agenda-Free Friday. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mary. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Glad to see you back. Glad you're feeling better. And much rather see you do this show than the other guy. My question to you is... Rask, and I know you don't like to do the backup goalie stuff, Rask 3 years ago was a pretty good goaltender. The last couple of years he hasn't showed us much. They have also acquired a new backup. He does have a lot of potential. You think this is going to scare Rask into coming back and being a decent goaltender? Thanks, Murray. God bless you.
You as well. So this is the bonus of signing Yaroslav Halak. And I know I did say the other day, like, do backup goalie on your own time. But there is something interesting with this guy in that he's been a legit starter in the NHL. I think that there is an ulterior motive to this signing because, you know, it was close to what Hudobin got. And Hudobin was a solid backup here. And hell, you know, they don't get into the playoffs without him last year. But Halak's a legit starter. So if Rask goes bad or he has another groin pull or something that has him playing a little bit shaky or he has to sit out for a couple of weeks. Like
if he gets the runs again, like a couple of years ago?
Yeah, maybe they're going to put the plug in him again before that last game of the season.
Against Ottawa?
Trying to squeak into the playoffs, that game against Ottawa. With Halak, like, okay, you have a solid backup that's been a starter in this league, and if he really looks good, well, I think that lights a fire under Rask's ass as well. Like, that's the ulterior motive. This is a guy that you can bring in to legitimately push Rask if he goes bad for a while and say, well, you know, we can start him instead and not really worry about it.
So here's where I'll disagree on that. Did they need that guy? Because last year, when Rask went bad, Cassidy turned to Hudobin and put Rask on notice that this is not automatically your job. If you don't perform, we'll go elsewhere. So shouldn't Rask already know that?
Yeah, but I think in the back of his mind, too, he could also know deep down, I mean, I'm just speculating, but if I'm Rask, I would think, well, how long before this all falls apart for Hudobin? He can start in stretches for maybe a couple of weeks and play as well as he did, but for a month, month and a half, if they have to, you're not going to get that kind of play out of Hudobin for those stretches. With Halak, I think you're more apt to get that.
So you're saying this could be like a Reggie Lemelin, Andy Moog?
Situation. Oh, yeah. Dialing it back. Yeah, it could be. It could be. I think that there is something
for
with
your
this.
$7 million a year goalie, he has to be motivated by who his backup
is. Look, with some of the commentary made by Cassidy, I don't think he's any fan of Rask. So
Ugh.
You don't like him?
No.
I think anything that can push Tuukka Rask, I'm for.
But why do we have to push this guy? He's supposed to be an elite goalie, a difference maker. That's what his salary is. He shouldn't have to be pushed. He shouldn't have had to have been pushed last year.
Is he? Has he lived up to what he's getting paid?
No, he hasn't, but that's what's so frustrating about him. Like, this idea that he has to be pushed, or he has to be coddled, he has to do this. He has to. I mean, honestly, I know I've said this before. I know, you know, Mike from Woburn or Parts Unknown or wherever he's living now always disagrees with me. They made a mistake. They should have traded Rask and kept Martin Jones. I'm not saying Martin Jones is Dominic Hasek. He's not, but he costs less, and I know we just got an extension. But he would have cost less at the time, and I think he's just as good. I really do. And you would have had more cap flexibility.
We'll do another Bruins thought here from Sean in Hingham. Hey, Sean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just the quick thing on Carlson. The reason why I don't think they're really in on him, or you haven't really heard the Bruins around him, is that they're not able to dump any salary right now. I think that's a kind of an issue. I think no one really wants to touch Rask if it came to it, or I don't think anyone wants to touch Backes or Krejci, which is kind of an issue. They don't have a ton of cap space, and they got a lot of contracts coming up, and they clearly have the pieces to go get Erik Karlsson, but they're just sitting on their hands. I really think it comes down to those no-trade clauses they just handed out like they're candy, and just they can't get, they're not appealing players at their prices. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sean.
So I would disagree with that, because if what he's saying is true, then why have the meeting with Tavares? Because you had to clear space for him, too.
Oh, I think that they already had it planned out what they were going to do. Maybe try to move Backes to Minnesota, or, you know, they had it in the back of their minds what they were going to do. They wouldn't have gotten the plane and had that meeting without
So you could
knowing.
Do the same thing for Karlsson, then?
Yeah, they could. So maybe there's not interest in that player for whatever reason, because of maybe age, or, you know, he's got foot injury that's been a nagging thing there.
Well, but you have to give up good assets and pieces and the contract.
Yeah.
And that could be where they're saying, no, we're not going to do it, you know, for this guy, or he just doesn't fit what they want to do. But, you know, Sean opened with that take, and I like it. I feel like it's kind of being underplayed. Like, if you're the Bruins, this is disastrous for you, and it's a little out of your control. I mean, you can't control who Tavares picks, but your chief competition in the division, the two best players to move in the NHL this offseason, have gone to your division rivals. I mean, that's as bad as it gets, and you haven't really done anything. So unless you're going to go out and get, you know, Panarin, or trade for, you know, Wayne Simmonds, or you just feel like one of these young guys is going to pop, like an Anders Bork is going to go crazy, or Trent Frederick, or JFK, one of those guys, they're not like the Celtics, where the Celtics didn't have to do a thing, Jim, and they were going to contend. You know, they weren't going to backslide because they were going to get talent. The Bruins are in a situation where the teams around them have gotten better, and if they don't get better too, then they're going to backslide.
Let's go to Mike in New Hampshire on my opening take on the national anthem, which discussion with the NFL. Go ahead, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
Good.
Good. I was just wondering on your thoughts. What would you think about not having the national anthem at all played?
Oh, Mike. This is something, I've talked with Chris on our Saturday show about this. This is something I'm 100% for. And I know there's probably someone that hears that, how dare you, you bad American. I just look at it as this. To me, sports, I don't hold them as some kind of sacred cow. They're no different than any other form of entertainment. Movies, television shows, concerts. They don't play the anthem before those. I would like that would fully get rid of the, still, Trump would find a way to, you know, still bash the NFL owners because they would change it again, and he would go after them and fire up his base.
No, he'd say, but now they won't even play the anthem. They don't even respect the country enough to play it.
The most un-American professional sports entity that there is, the NFL. Go get them. Rah! And people in the streets with their torches. If in a perfect world for me, yeah. No anthem. No forced patriotism before professional sports. Again, no different form of entertainment to me than television shows, movies, etc., etc. And they don't play it before those.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.